Welcome to All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, Director of Lincoln City Libraries. I continue to read my way through the American Library Association Notable Books list. Today's title, Blood at the Root, A Racial Cleansing in America by Patrick Phillips, is yet another book that I hadn't heard much about, but it packs a punch, and as historical, nonfiction, relates to many issues in the news today. Its author, Patrick Phillips, is known as a poet, a translator, and a professor. It was through a conversation with former United States Poet Laureate Natasha Trethewey that he was inspired to explore this story. In an author's note at the end of the book, he writes, "This book would not exist without a kind but determined push from Natasha Trethewey, who challenged me more than a decade ago to tell this story. Having grappled with America's racial history so often in her work, Natasha turned to me during a cab ride in New York City and asked why it was that she, a Southern woman of color, wrote about blackness, yet I, a white man from one of the most racist places in the country, never said a word about whiteness. Why, Natasha asked, do you think you're not involved? I am ashamed to recall how I defended my silence, and I am proud to say that her question helped me begin this project." Blood at the Root is the story of Forsyth County, Georgia. Its title refers to the song about lynching, Strange Fruit, made famous by Billie Holiday. In 1912, a group of young black men was accused of raping and murdering a young white woman in Forsyth County. One man was lynched. Others were executed at a public hanging with a picnic atmosphere. This behavior was described with approval in area newspapers, as Philip writes. In the days that followed, Georgia newspapers were quick to declare that the bloody ritual had been an end, not a beginning, to Forsyth's race trouble. "The provocation of the people of Forsyth was great," said the Cherokee Advance, "and they simply did what Anglo-Saxons have done north, south, east, and west, where Negroes have outraged white women. They formed a mob and took the law into their own hands." The Atlanta Journal agreed that as gruesome as the killing was, whites had now exhausted their rage and no further trouble was expected at coming. An editorial in the Gainesville Times went further, congratulating the white mobs of Forsyth for having done no worse and for having lynched no more. But the violence did not end there. In the months that followed the attack on the women, night riders drove over 1,000 black people out of the county until eventually no black people lived there. Phillips notes the variety of black families, some who were landowners with established prosperous farms, some with next to nothing, some who worked for prominent white families, who were all forced out. Typically, a family was warned that it was their time to go, and if they did not, arson or other intimidation would follow, as Phillips writes here. Farm by farm, cabin by cabin, the last black residents who dared to remain in Forsyth after the death of May Crow were rooted out, and those who defended them were taught, with dynamite and torches, the cost of resisting the new whites-only rule. Whatever Sheriff Reed knew about the men behind such terrorism, and whatever role he played in the violent performances that took place after dark, there is no record of a single warrant or arrest for any of the crimes committed against the property and people of Black Forsyth in 1912. By mid-October, the editor of the Dahlonega Negat could claim that a gentleman of Forsyth County who was here last week said every Negro who lived in it was gone. Not a single one is left to tell the tale. Forsyth County remained virtually all white into the 1980s. At the time the author's family moved into the area in 1977 when he was in second grade, most of those who would have been present at that time were dead, and yet the county remained white only. His mother was a reporter there in the early 1980s when a man was shot in Forsyth County and she was sent to cover the story. She expected it was likely a hunting accident of some kind, but no. The man was black. He and a black woman from Atlanta had attended a company picnic in a park there, not knowing the county's history. they were shot at by a group of white men angry with them for being there. In 1987, the attention of the nation was drawn to Forsyth County when a group of activists organized a march to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the lynchings, night riding, and all that had happened to keep the county all white. While black people clearly had a legal right to live there, the county's reputation was well known in the area. So how did change happen? Cumming, Georgia, the county seat of Forsyth County, is just 42 miles from Atlanta. As that city grew, people from outside moved into the area, people unaware of the history, who saw mostly a beautiful setting of trees and hills within a reasonable commute of the city. Local business people understood that companies locating in their area boosted economic development and understood as well that those companies would bring diverse employees and diverse customers. So here is how he describes what one sees in Forsyth County today. If you drive around Cumming today, you will see more than a few black and brown faces among all the white ones, people of color working and shopping in Forsyth County stores, walking the streets of the town square, and sending their children to the local schools. What you won't find is a single trace of 1912 or any acknowledgement of the racial cleansing that defined the county for most of the 21st century. Instead, the timeless, placeless veneer of American suburbia has so completely covered over the past that not even the young black men and women working the cash registers of the county seem to realize that Forsyth was whites only just a few decades ago, or that the ground under some of its subdivisions, malls, and big box stores once belonged to earnest, hardworking black farmers. Phillips tells this story primarily as an outsider, even though he moved there in second grade. Although the book was written following urging by a black poet laureate to explore his history as a white person, Phillips keeps a distance from the figures who shaped the events in 1912 and after. One wonders how the story might be different had he been a direct descendant of any of those people. When Phillips returned to the area in the 20-teens to explore the story, he had to rely on documents and newspapers, taking a sabbatical from Drew University in New York in order to delve into archives in Georgia. He interviewed people who were children at the time of the original lynchings or who heard about what happened from older relatives. He cites as many sources and employs a straightforward journalistic tone in bringing the information forward. A question he doesn't address is who actually committed the attacks on two white women in 1912 in Forsyth County, Georgia. His focus remains on how the white community of Forsyth County, Virginia, used the situation to create an all-white enclave and maintain that status far into the 20th century. As noted, this is a book that, while about history, certainly applies to contemporary times. Phillips started this book and wrote this book before the recent demonstrations by white supremacists and neo-Nazis. It's one more demonstration that going back to tell a story that happened some time ago often lends us a way and a lens for viewing what's happening in our country today. The book is Blood at the Root, A Racial Cleansing in America by Patrick Phillips. You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online when you visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.